fighting as if it were the lid of a tin can. Now exposed, Booker Gaines was standing there, assault rifle tucked against his shoulder, looking very much like a man at a crossroads in his life. Challenge the SWAT team, which had just proven it was not going to be bullied, or surrender, and spend arguably the best remaining years of his life behind bars. He moved left, and another man was visible in the dust fog. Vail believed it to be Scott McFarlane. The officers launched penetrating rounds of CS gas, a riot control agent that causes a burning irritation of the eyes, nose, and throat. They tore into the open end of the barricade, a dense, smoky haze filling the interior. Vail counted the seconds, expecting to see Gaines and McFarlane driven from the trailer, hands interlinked behind their necks. Instead, they ran forward in tandem through the gaseous cloud, weapons blazing. That was the last action the men took, as two SWAT officers opened fire. "Wait here," the SWAT commander said as they got back into the Bearcat and then drove up to the log cabin. "Maybe you should run after the truck," Vail said to Ramos. "Through the minefield. Seems like your kind of gig." He looked at her, but did not reply. "You could have gotten us killed." "You didn't have to follow me," Ramos said. "You made your choice."
"You made it an impossible choice. I couldn't let you go alone. Anything happened, I would have had a really tough time living with myself."
"Whatever. Rationalize it any way you want."
"You know what, Ramos? You really disappoint me. Partner with someone else."
Vail walked away and joined Hurdle behind his SUV. "Everything okay?" Vail kept her gaze focused on the Bearcat as it pulled up in front of its target.
"Everything's great."
"Didn't look like it. You and Ray..."
"I said, everything's great. We just had a disagreement."
"Fire!" Tarkov started toward the open end of the trailer, then stopped, no doubt remembering the potential mines. "Anyone got an extinguisher?" Vail pulled out her phone. "Calling it in. Doubt FD will get here before the blaze takes out everything in that sardine can, but they can prevent it from spreading to the forest."
"The trees and flora are draped in snow and ice," Hurdle said. "I don't think there's much of a risk."
She reported their location and then watched as SWAT encircled the cabin.
"You think Gaines or McFarlane set that fire?" Morrison asked.
"Not necessarily. It can happen from SWAT's gas canisters." As she started to reholster her phone, it buzzed in her hand. A red alarm icon was blinking, informing her that Jasmine's tracker was back online. She opened the app, and a moment later, a string of GPS coordinates appeared. Jasmine's current location.
"That doesn't mean she's safe, just that the unit's working and transmitting a signal."
She thought of updating Hurdle on Underwood, but the sounds of gunfire snatched her attention. Her head snapped up, and she saw the windows of the cabin shatter, gas filling what she figured was the main room. The officers entered, and seconds later, Hurdle's phone rang.
"All clear," he said. "Let's go. We'll follow the tire tracks of the Bearcat to avoid any trip wires or mines."
Vail tapped the numbers and walked toward the cabin while the map loaded with a beeping dot. She zoomed in and the device's location came into focus.
"I know that address. Is she crazy?"
"I need your car," Vail yelled to Hurdle. He turned and stopped, hesitating a second, then tossed her the keys. They landed at her feet and she retraced her steps to the SUV, revved the engine and made a tight circle, headed down the hill. As Vail drove faster than she should have been going, bumping violently on the potholed road, one thought kept running through her mind.
What the hell is going on?
Chapter 53. Vail waited until she reached the main road, which was smooth and flat. She took a second to get her bearings, then dialed Curtis. He did not pick up.
"What is it these days? No one answers his phone?"
"Meet me at Jasmine's house," she said to the voicemail. "We might have a problem. I mean, another problem." Vail arrived in Bethesda at 4:35 p.m., the clouded sky resembling a deep bruise, charcoal with hues of blue-gray and swirls of black. She pulled to the curb and walked up to the front door. The
The tracker had said that Jasmine was at home, but there's no way she would go there because of the risk involved. If there was one place her father would know to look for her, it was there. Jasmine knew that. Had she gone there to pick up some clothing? An ATM card? Risky, but maybe she thought she could tell if he was surveilling the place, waiting for her. That was something Jasmine would do. Her enormous sense of self-confidence, however misguided, often led her to believe that she could adequately assess dangers as well as a trained law enforcement officer could. Or perhaps she thought that Marx had already determined she was not living there and would not take a chance on returning. There would be no need for him to watch her house, in which case it would be safe for her to go there. Still, it was a gamble, one that Jasmine had been careful to avoid. Vale knocked, waited, nothing. For that matter, Jasmine's car was not out front. In the garage? Vale tried the doorknob. Locked. She pulled out her phone and called the home line. Heard it ring in the kitchen, but it went to voicemail. Opened the Find Me app and waited for it to obtain the signal, but the spinning dial kept rotating. She waited 15 seconds, then 20. What am I going to do? Stand here like a fool? She went around to the back and tried the knob, but had the same result. Kick it in? She checked the app one more time, but that wheel, or whatever it was still spinning. Before she could talk herself out of it, she lifted her leg and struck the jam squarely with her boot. A second later, she was standing inside the house. Jazz, it's Karen. Where are you? No response. In fact, there were no lights on, and with the setting sun, it was dark. She flicked on a lamp and glanced around, then walked to the foot of the staircase. Jasmine! Vale ascended the stairs, did a search of the second floor, and found nothing. No Jasmine, and nothing out of order. The downstairs looked much as she remembered the last time she was there. She started for the garage when she saw the basement door. She pulled it open, turned on the light, and descended. Hey, Jazz, you down here? It was a finished room. Fairly basic, with a tile floor and a large area rug, an old sofa bed, washer and dryer, and no one down there. Come on, Jasmine, she said under her breath. I know you were here. As she turned to leave, a dog barked. Jasmine doesn't have a dog. After what her father did to her stuffed animal, she would never have a pet of any kind, especially a dog. Where is it? Vale whistled. It barked again, a deep baritone. It's got some size to it. Hey, guy, where are you? More barking. Vale moved closer to the far wall, put her ear to it, and listened. Called him again. How's my doggie doing? Crying, friendly, excited, growling, Vale looked at the paneling and ran a finger over one of the seams. And then she saw it, a break from floor to ceiling. She had some experience with these. After pulling out her handcuff key, she dug it into the ridge and pried it open. And there was a concealed door with a room beyond it and a dog. Chapter 54. Hey, boy. Vale gave his face and neck a rub as she turned on her phone's flashlight. What are you doing down here? She checked. He was, in fact, a male, and he was not wearing a collar. Her phone rang. She answered it immediately, without checking caller ID. You here somewhere? It was Curtis. In the basement. Come in the back door. I opened it for you. A moment later, she heard Curtis's heavy footsteps descending the stairs. You opened it for me? You broke in. What the hell's going on? She did not want to tell him about the tracker, so she simply said, Jasmine wasn't answering. Of course she's not answering. She's not He appeared in the doorway and noticed Vale's new companion. What's a dog doing here? He went up to Curtis, tail wagging, and licked his hand. I was wondering the same thing, and here's another mystery. This is a concealed room. He drew his chin back, then turned and looked at the doorway. I don't get it. Makes two of us. Let's have a look around. Why are you here? That requires a bit of an explanation, and I guess now's as good a time as any.
She told him about the device Uzi had given her.
I don't even know where to begin with that, but we'll save it for another time. Right now, we need to make sense of what's going on. And apparently, that starts with a hidden room and a strange dog. Is it Jasmine's?
No, she can't have pets.
Seeing Curtis's confused look, she said, because of what Marks did to one of her stuffed animals as a kid.
Shit, that's right.
Curtis pulled out his iPhone and started dialing. We need animal control. Until we figure out who this guy belongs to, someone's got to look after him. While he made the call and gave them the address, Vale started taking a quick inventory of the room. It was roughly 10 by 12 feet with a futon, shelving on one wall, and a cheap laminate armoire. You get anything from reading Underwood's book? He asked as he hung up.
Yes, maybe. I mean, she sighed, I've got some problems with Underwood. I finally reached him, and he lied to me. Twice.
How so?
He told me he was in Hawaii, but I reached the show's producer, and they wrapped filming weeks ago. He finally called me back. We spoke for less than a minute, and he said he was boarding a plane to Philly to testify in a case. But I looked up the case. The trial was postponed for 3 months.
Curtis looked at her. What the hell? Vale turned back to the room.
I know. I didn't want to say anything to Hurdle. He seemed to want to go hard after Underwood. And I don't know. I guess I feel like we owe him more than that.
We can't let emotions get in the way of doing our jobs.
Am I doing that?
There's food here, Curtis said. A water bowl and some dog crap. No collar, but he's definitely cared for.
By whom?
No way Jasmine would risk coming back here on a regular basis.
Add it to the list of things I can't explain. She crouched down and... Oh, shit.
Vale got up and spun around, her gaze darting from one wall to another.
We've got to get out of here.
Why?
What? I'll explain when we're in the car. Leave the dog. Follow me.
Leave the dog? We can't just
do it. Did you touch anything? Move anything?
I don't think so. No.
Then let's go.
She passed through the door and closed it behind Curtis, her heart dropping at the sight of the pooch's sad eyes. Vale ran up the steps, her gaze moving from one wall to another, one corner and shelf to the next. They exited the back door where they had entered.
Karen, what the hell's going on?
They came around the side of the house and Vale pressed the remote for her Honda.
Move your car, a block away at least, quickly. Meet me at the corner and call animal control. Tell them not to come.
Why can't you just... Vale started the engine and drove down the street, then parked in front of Curtis and got into his Ford. He gave her a hard look.
Now what the fuck's going on?
Vale sat there a long moment trying to work it through. I'm not completely sure, and I'm afraid that what I'm thinking won't make any sense.
Just tell me. We'll work it through together.
I'm pretty sure that's Thomas Underwood's dog in there.
Underwood's dog? What are you talking about?
How, when I spoke to him this afternoon, like I said, it was a short conversation, but right before he ended the call, he told me to read his book carefully and that I'd find some of my answers there.
Okay? Why is that weird?
I'm not sure.
You were reading one of his books?
Yes. She dug two fingers into her temples and rubbed. And I found a case where there was a note found in a victim's mouth that said, next in line.
Which could be explained by Mark's reading Underwood's book, and he and Gaines are copying the killer. What's the problem?
He studied her face a moment and said,
You think it really is Underwood who's been setting these fires?
Things weren't adding up. Aren't adding up.
Again, we know that. Spit it out. Was Marks reading Underwood's book, or is Underwood involved too?
I don't think that's what really happened. I think that... Vale gathered her thoughts. Curtis waited a moment, then said between clenched teeth,
In a second, I'm gonna start shaking you.
Come on, Karen, think clearly. She took a deep breath.
Did you see what was in that room in the basement?
I was just starting to look it all over when you freaked and said we had to bug out. Vale stared ahead at the descending darkness, at the headlights that were driving down the road toward them. There was a camera mounted in the corner of the wall. I'm guessing it's a wireless camera so that someone could watch it over the internet from another location. Lots of people have those. Vale closed her eyes. She did not want to say it, but she had to. One of Underwood's cases involved the kidnapping of a detective. I don't think Underwood's a killer. He's been lying to me because I think he's been snatched up, and his call was being monitored so he couldn't tell me what was really going on, but he tried to give me a clue. A clue about what? That he's been kidnapped, and how to find him or who's got him. I'll humor you for a minute. Let's say you're right. Who's got him? Vale bit her bottom lip. I think we screwed up. She turned to Curtis. There were books down there, too. Thomas Underwood's books. Someone's camping out in Jasmine's house? Marks is living in that basement, and he's got Underwood holed away somewhere, and he's watching the dog remotely? That makes no sense. It makes perfect sense, except that you've got a few things mixed up. Roscoe Lee Marks isn't holding Underwood hostage. Jasmine is. Jasmine? Why the hell would she do that? Vale found it hard to form the words. She hesitated and tried to clear her mind, tried to reason it out. Karen, Curtis said, what the hell's going on? What am I missing? Vale turned to him and found the words tumbling from her lips before she could make sense of it. Jasmine is the Bloodline's killer. Chapter 55. Are you feeling okay? Vale closed her eyes. No, I'm not. I have to think this through. I just know what I'm seeing here and now, and it doesn't add up. There could be other explanations. There could be. Gaines could have come looking for Jasmine, and she wasn't here, so he broke through the wall and put that stuff in there. Why would he do that? He had his own secluded place in the hills. No need to build a fake room. That trailer was pretty well hidden. Besides, planning went into creating that hidden area. A false wall had to be constructed. Vale was still working it through her mangled thoughts. Fine, but there has to be another answer. Maybe, but I don't think that's what's going on here. Karen, I worked this case hard. Thomas Underwood, one of the BAU's best and brightest, one of the founding fathers of the profiling unit, drew up the behavioral assessment. Neither of us had any doubt Marks was our guy. You didn't either. You may have been a rookie profiler, but you were a veteran cop and detective. You knew your way around a murder case as well as me. We had definitive forensics at two scenes, and Marks pled to both those murders, right? Vale nodded. I know. Why the hell would he do that if he was innocent? And we know he's killed several people since breaking out. That was Marks, no question. And there haven't been any murders with that M.O. and ritual since he's been incarcerated. Right, Curtis said. They started again after he broke out. I know that. I need time to think. And the ether at Gaines' place? And the homosexual connection? Vale slammed her hand against the dashboard. I know! It doesn't make sense. I've got to clear my head and reason this out. Anything at Gaines' trailer? Whatever was there, the fire finished it off. Vale pulled out her phone and reloaded Uzi's Find Me tracking app. Please give me a good connection. Right now, our objectives are to find Jasmine, find Underwood, and find Marks. We'll sort it out later. GPS coordinates appeared, and Vale took a moment to peruse the numbers. Judging by her frequent visits to this location, it was a significant place for Jasmine. Finally, Vale popped open her door. Where are you going? I'll follow in my car. Vale tapped, the map rotated, and... Got it. Arlington. She texted Leslie Johnson and asked her to get land records on the address she was including in the message.
Talk to me, Curtis said.
I have a location on Jasmine. Call Hurdle. Tell him we need the task force and SWAT at the residence. I'm sending everyone. She tapped it out and hit send.
SWAT?
If I'm right, Underwood's being held at that address.
But you could be wrong about all of this. This whole thing with Underwood, it's just a guess.
Look, none of this makes any sense. I don't know what to think, but we've got no idea who's waiting for us there. Jasmine? Marks? Someone else? Who knows? After what just happened with Gaines...
Fine, I'll make the call.
Chapter 56 Marks had exhausted all means of locating Jasmine, having repeatedly driven up and down the streets in the vicinity where he had left her after she had disabled him, to no avail. He thought of wearing some form of disguise and going door to door, but the risks were too great. It only took one observant and law-abiding citizen who had been watching the news to dial 911. The police were everywhere as it was, with roadblocks and swarming patrols. He did not need to do anything to make their job easier. Left with no other alternative, he returned to her place in Bethesda, hoping she would eventually come back, if for no other reason than to pick up a change of clothing. Jasmine finally showed up around midnight. She did not turn on any lights when she entered the residence and was inside barely 4 minutes. Before he could decide if he should go in after her, she came out and headed for her car. He followed the vehicle at an extreme distance of about 50 yards, deciding that it was better to lose her than be discovered. If he did fall too far back, he could always sit on her house again the next night. And that was precisely what happened. The following evening, much earlier this time, she returned, entered covertly, and left very quickly. But this time, figuring, correctly as it turned out, that she was headed to the same destination, he was better equipped to hang back and still stay with her. After making it all the way into Arlington, he had to close the gap, because she would likely be making turns down side streets. If he was too far back, there would be no way for him to keep up with her. Following a few course changes, she headed straight for a line of row houses. Mark slowed, then watched as she hung a left and made a quick U-turn. He continued on down the block and parked. Lights went on inside a corner townhome. He sat there for a while, getting his bearings, watching who came and went, when a vehicle pulled up in front of the place where Jasmine had entered. Marks leaned back in his seat away from the window when he saw who got out, Vale and that detective Curtis. This presented an interesting opportunity. If he acted swiftly and flawlessly, he could take out his three primary nemeses in a matter of minutes. But could he pull it off? As he mulled that thought, he would have to wait and see if they separated for any length of time. He noticed that Vale suddenly had a gun in her hand. Marks clenched his jaw. Could he take her on with a weapon at the ready? What about Curtis? The street was relatively dark, so perhaps he could make it close to her, using the bushes until he was upon her. He leaned forward and watched. Chapter 57 Vale arrived first, followed a second later by Curtis. Vale drove past the house, an older three-story brick colonial attached on the left and fronting a side street on the right. A dozen concrete steps with a wrought iron railing led up to the front door about 24 feet away. Cars lined the curb, and residual snow blanketed the lawns and sidewalks. They got out of their vehicles and perused the area. Let's grab a look around the perimeter, low-key, evaluate entrances, exits, see if we can get a peek inside.
That's all we do, Curtis said. We're not going in alone.
Not unless I'm right and Underwood's a hostage, and his life's in immediate danger.
Fine.
They unholstered their handguns and moved covertly toward the townhome, Curtis heading to the back and Vale taking the front. Vale used the thick hedges, their yellowing leaves intact, as cover to get as close as possible before moving into the open. She ascended the stairs and stopped behind the last bush and surveyed the eaves and other hidden areas where a camera could have been concealed. She saw nothing. She continued to the last few steps closest to the entrance, which were made out of metal grating, presumably to prevent pooling water from becoming sheets of ice during the winter months. The door featured an ornately carved gold leaf embossed glass window, but Vale avoided it.
keeping her head below eye level as she approached. An American flag flapped noisily in the breeze 15 feet to the left, fighting for her attention as she tried to make an accurate assessment of the premises. She descended a few feet and moved right toward the windows, fighting through the branch-dense bushes. The curtains were drawn but unlined, so Vale should have been able to at least see forms if anyone was inside. Although the lights were on, the living and dining rooms appeared to be empty. She was unsure where Curtis was, but until she heard from him, there was nothing for her to do but wait, listen, and observe. Until a noise to her right snagged her attention. Curtis took a circuitous route to the back door, along the perimeter, looking for a point where he could either climb over the white cedar lock board fence or locate some kind of easement that would give him access. He found a well-camouflaged gate, but it was securely latched. He tried to reach over the top and feel for a release lever, but it was too high off the ground. He shoved his right shoulder against it to test its integrity and found that it gave a bit more than he would have thought, considering the healthy condition of the wood. Curtis stepped back and brought up his foot, slammed it against the planks, and knocked it open. He immediately regretted the noise. If Jasmine was in fact a kidnapper or a killer, and if Underwood was inside with her, the last thing he wanted to do was tip her off to their presence. 10 steps in, he curved around the rear of the house and along the path that led to the back door. He approached cautiously, not knowing who besides Jasmine was inside. He surveyed the yard, which was longer than wide, with planters on either side of the inlaid masonry path. A large wood double gate was built into the fence, fronting the side street. He walked over and took a closer look. Tire marks in the grass and dirt were barely discernible. Whoever lived here drove their car into the yard. To park it? Because there's no garage? He moved back toward the residence and saw something in the corner, a few inches taller than he was, covered with a black tarpaulin. He could feel a metal frame and a base with wheels, but he had no idea what it was without removing the cover. First, however, he had to stick to the task. He leaned up against the brick siding, then peered into the nearest window. The kitchen was empty, and as far as he could see, the other rooms were likewise vacant, although a lamp burned across the way in an area that was not visible to his line of sight. He pulled back and retraced his steps, headed toward a rendezvous with Vale. Vale stood still, Glock raised, peering into the darkness. Her breathing had quickened, and she puffed vapor into the frigid night air. Before she had time to investigate, Curtis appeared, coming around the side of the house. She started down the stairs toward the street and met him at the curb one house over. "Anything?" she asked. He shook his head. "Lights are on inside, didn't see anyone." "Same here. Heard something right before I saw you, not sure what it was." "Might have been me. I snapped some twigs on the way around, and that was after I kicked the gate in. Not my stealthiest moment." He told her about the yard, the wide gate, and covered metal contraption he had found, as well as the tire tracks. As Vale started to comment, a text hit her phone. At the same moment, a call came through. She glanced at the message first. "SWAT, 9 minutes out." She brought the handset up to her face. "Vale?" "This is Lawrence Vickers. I'm working with your task force, reading the books written by Agent Underwood."
"Right. Find anything?"
"Not sure. In his latest book, The Masked Mind, there are 2 cases that could be relevant. First involved a male killer whose daughter accidentally witnessed his first kill. Then he used her to help him get the Vix in a vulnerable position so he could snatch them up. Second one's from Brazil. Killer grabbed up a child, held him for ransom, and even though the family paid, he killed the kid. He did this 4 times until he took a detective's son, the cop who was working the case. Oh, and there's a 3rd one. 2 male killers go, Karen, hey, heads up." Curtis nudged her arm hard and indicated the passing car. "Woman driving, kind of looks like Jasmine. Came from around back, the side street." "Gotta go," Vale said to Vickers, to Curtis.
"You sure?"
"Yeah," he said, running toward his Ford. "Didn't see Underwood. Check the house. I'm going after that car." Vale ran up the steps, but pulled out her phone to locate the Find Me tracking beacon before breaking down the door, just in case Curtis was wrong. The Samsung started vibrating and the alarm was flashing, indicating that the connection had been reestablished. The coordinates populated the screen, and the map showed Jasmine in motion. She was nearby, but not in the townhome. Curtis was right. That was her. Phil holstered the cell and kicked in the door, then moved swiftly but carefully through the house. Rather than checking the upper floor, she figured the basement was the most likely place Jasmine would be keeping Underwood if she had left him behind. Had Jasmine seen them, or was it a coincidence she was leaving soon after they arrived? Phil descended the basement steps, turned on the lights, and her breath caught. Chapter 58. Thomas Underwood was lying on the floor, a tourniquet tight around his neck, his veins distended, his color more purple than flesh-toned. Vale was on him in a split second. She tugged at the sheet-like noose, but it was too tight against his neck. Zedek! Vale pulled it from its scabbard, pressed the dull edge against Underwood's skin, and sliced through the cotton.
Come on, Thomas. Are you with me?
She felt for a pulse, alive but unconscious. He was tied behind his back, but Vale nevertheless succeeded in rolling him into a supine position. She elevated his legs, then bent them repeatedly at the knees, helping to force blood back toward his heart and brain.
Thomas, wake up!
She searched the basement for something that could help revive him, and found a jug of bleach on the laundry room shelf. It was not smelling salts, but it should work. Vale soaked the cotton tourniquet, coughing and struggling to see through the heavy tearing from the intense fumes, and waved it underneath his nostrils. He jerked his head away, groaned, then slowly opened his eyes.
That's it. Come on. You know who I am? Karen? Do you remember what happened?
Help me up. Vale got behind him and pushed him into a seated position, then freed his hands. He took a deep breath and wiped his clammy brow with his sleeve.
I was wrong. I got it so wrong, I'm embarrassed to admit it. My last case, I thought I was going out with a bang, but apparently I went out with a resounding thud.
So Jasmine is the Bloodline's killer?
Yes.
Vale sat down beside him.
We both got it wrong. But how?
She's a cold-blooded, violent psychopath. There's very little literature on predatory or hunting behavior, as it's seen with psychopathy, in females. I know of only a few cases, and they're not well documented. Women prefer poisonings. Far down the list is guns and then knives. He turned to her.
Sorry, I know you know this. But physical attacks like this by a woman are almost unheard of, especially female on male. If for no other reason they lack the strength to disable.
That's why she used the ether. She probably seduced them to get close, then anesthetized them just long enough to restrain them and play with the body, then do the kill. She had as much time as she wanted to have her fun, and between the tree cover and tall fences, no one would see her loading a body into the car at night. She'd still have to be able to lift a body, even if she did it a little at a time. A dead body is, well, dead weight.
Ever seen one of those hydraulic patient lifts? They use them in nursing homes and dialysis centers. Small, yet very efficient. Kind of like jacking up a car. Minimal effort, but it can lift a hell of a lot of weight. You put a sling on a patient, or in Jasmine's case, the victim's body, and then hook it to the device. A few easy pumps of the lever and you can set the body in the trunk. A child could do it.
Curtis saw something like that in the yard, covered with a tarp.
Where there's a will, there's always a way.
So she got the Vicks here, where she killed them, and then used her car to deposit the bodies at the dump sites wherever we found them. How'd she get them out of the trunk?
She's very strong.
His hands went to his neck and felt the bruise from the tourniquet.
But if she's not worried about hurting the body, which she wouldn't be, she'd definitely be able to pull it over the edge and let it fall to the ground.
Vale heard a noise outside. SWAT had arrived. She called Hurdle, who she suspected was with them, or could reach them, and told him about finding Underwood and Curtis's pursuit of Jasmine.
Curtis lost her, Hurdle said. We've got a bolo out.
He got her plate, so it's just a matter of time.
If you talked with Curtis, you know about Jasmine and why he was tailing her?
I do. That was all he said, but she felt there were volumes behind those two simple words.
We'll talk about it later.
Yeah, he said. I guess we will. I'll be at your 20 in 2 minutes. She hung up and turned back to Underwood.
Marks was not involved in any of the murders?
Not the Bloodlines kills, but he had at least two to his credit. Years before his arrest, there was a gas station attendant he shot when Jasmine was 12, Indianapolis. They were on their way back from watching the race, Marks and Rhonda, his wife, and Jasmine. He went to fill up while Rhonda used the restroom. Marks got into it with the attendant about something, and the guy pulled out a gun. Marks took it off him and shot him point blank right in the face.
And Jasmine saw this?
She said she did.
And the other kill?
Rhonda.
So she didn't slip on a skate in the garage, Fail said.
I just listened to the 911 tape today. Jasmine really sold it. She was completely believable. Impressive. A psychopath at a fairly young age who can act.
Fail's mouth dropped open slightly. Shit.
She's good.
Yeah, she is. And I'm not saying that to be self-serving, but she fooled us, all of us. She even altered her ritual on Vic's 9 and 10 to throw us off track, to suggest there were two killers. That's beyond good. That's an awareness we don't often see.
There was another murder you probably don't know about. Mark supposedly shot a kid during a struggle. Other teen brought the gun. But given everything we now know, I'm not sure anything we were told was true. I doubt there was a struggle at all. He probably just killed the kid.
Underwood frowned.
Quite the family.
But Marks really is trying to kill Jasmine, Vale said. That much I'm sure of. I saw the anger. I mean, Marks is a violent man and a killer.
I agree with your assessment. He exhibits only some of the psychopathic cluster, and since there's a genetic predisposition, it makes sense that Jasmine also has these traits, but to a greater extent.
She shook her head. How could I not have seen it? I mean, I didn't know her well, but I had a fair amount of contact with her over the years.
Because she was grooming you, manipulating you for her benefit.
Vale thought about that and felt like putting her fist through the wall. She had to take the personal affront out of the equation. She forced her thoughts back to the case.
Why would Marks plead guilty to the Bloodline kills?
He only pled to two murders, Underwood chuckled wryly.
And he only did that because Jasmine was going to rat him out on Rhonda and the gas station attendant. This way, if he pleads to the two Bloodlines kills, he's famous. He's talked about forever in serial killer lore, and it's no difference to him. He was probably going to go down for the murder of his wife without question.
There was a witness, a compelling witness, who could turn on the tears of how her father bullied her and threatened her if she didn't lie for him. No one was going to believe the hulking thug over the beautiful blonde when those tears started flowing.
And I'm guessing she planted the evidence at those two Bloodline scenes, her father's hair and blood, to frame him.
Right, Underwood said as he slowly rose from the floor and sat down on the couch.
And he knew that. He knew there was no way he was going to get acquitted for those two murders. We had his DNA at the scenes. Not a chance in hell they'd believe his story.
Vale joined him on the sofa.
That's why he took the deal. Plead to the two, no death penalty.
He was going to do life no matter what. If he didn't agree to the deal, the one Jasmine presented him with, she would tell the police a convincing story she'd cooked up about how her father planned Rhonda's murder for weeks. Maybe she even planted some evidence for us to find as well in case it became necessary, in case we went looking.
Bam, you've got premeditation, special circumstances, and the death penalty.
She's one smart, evil bitch. But why does he want to kill her? Because she was going to rat?
Fail's ears perked up at the sound of footfalls on the steps.
Fail, you down here?
Yeah.
Hurdle appeared seconds later. His eyes found Vale's colleague.
Thomas Underwood, I take it?
Underwood held out a hand and they shook.
Karen here saved my life.
Hurdle smirked and nodded.
Good for her. Might be the only thing she got right in this case. Hey! Vail rose, but Underwood grabbed her arm. I don't know what agency you're with, but Marshal Service, Hurdle said, subtly moving his jacket aside and revealing the badge he was wearing on a chain around his neck. He heads up the Capital Area Regional Fugitive Task Force. Underwood absorbed that, then nodded. Marshal, I don't want to sound condescending, but this was a very complex murder case, perhaps the most difficult in my career, which spans 4 decades. It's wholly unfair to find any blame with Karen, or me, or Eric Curtis. We were all duped by 2 people who had motivations and a set of circumstances we've never encountered before. I'd even say no police force in the world has come up against something as elaborate as this, featuring 2 very disturbed psychopaths. Hurdle frowned. I'll debrief you tomorrow, assuming you get it all figured out, he faced Vail, and assuming we catch your buddy Jasmine. I feel bad enough about this. Thanks for rubbing it in. My pleasure. Really, it is. He turned to leave and spoke as he walked out. Now I've got to go catch 2 goddamn fugitives. He'll get over it, Underwood said as Hurdle ascended the steps. He's pissed, but he doesn't have a clue what was really going on in this case. I do. I lived it. You do, because you lived the tail end of it. Just know that it is what it is. We do our best, and sometimes that's not good enough. But know that you gave it your all. You did, didn't you? Give it my all? Vail studied his face. Always. Underwood smiled. I have no doubt. Vail's phone vibrated with a text from Leslie Johnson. Townhouse owned by Edna Heasley, age 94. Curtis told me why you were looking at this place. SS checks still being cashed. No children, no known friends still alive. Curtis thinks Edna is another Jasmine victim, so to speak. I think he's right. Sorry, just got the 411 on who owns this house. She typed a quick thanks to Johnson, then turned back to Underwood. Jasmine's had it for 9 years, he said. This is the place we searched for and never found. There are supposedly trophies here, somewhere. How do you know? How do you know all this other stuff about Jasmine? Underwood chortled and coughed. He cleared his throat, then said, I asked her. She told me. When I started to put it together, she laughed at me for getting it so wrong. I felt so humiliated. It's not just you. I'm good at dishing out advice, but don't think I didn't beat myself up over it, too. Which was, of course, what she wanted. She wanted to feel like she was in control, which meant beating me down. Me, the expert. Plus, she figured there's no reason not to tell me. Because she was going to kill you. And when she saw you at the door, She saw me? There was a camera? Underwood gestured across the room where a small monitor showed a view of both the front and rear of the house. Vail kicked a stool that was a foot to her left. I looked. I didn't see anything. Above that monitor was another screen of the dog she had found at Jasmine's. That's yours, isn't it? Rusty, yeah. I saw when you found him. You made him and me very happy. I take it Jasmine wasn't here when I was there. You missed her by 2 or 3 minutes. Sorry I had to leave Rusty behind. She took out her phone to text Curtis to tell him to send an officer to pick up the retriever and bring him to her house for the time being. I saw what happened, Underwood said. You realized what was going on and you got your asses out of there in case Jasmine hadn't already seen you. How'd you find her? Val explained the device Uzi had given her. So you know where she is now? Maybe. It's subject to interference, so there are times when I don't get a real-time location. She opened the app. It showed a static signal. Did she stop somewhere? She texted the coordinates to Curtis, who said he and Tarkov were not far away. Underwood gave her a dubious look. Either she's found what she thinks is a good place to lie low for a while, or... She found the device and ditched it. As soon as I showed up here, I was worried she'd realize I had some way of tracking her. She was careful to use burner phones to keep from being found by Marks, as well as, apparently, by me. So there'd be no way for me to find this place unless I followed her. I'm sure she was extremely careful about that.
I need time to rethink all my contacts with her, both recent stuff and in the past. What things did I tell her when my guard was down? What kind of information did I divulge about the investigation? Vale closed her eyes. What a mess. You were about to tell me why Marx wants to kill her, before Hurdle showed up.
Right. Jasmine said he agreed to take the fall for the murders because he had no choice, but to have it rubbed in his face, to see her get all the glory of the abused and suffering little girl, was too much for him. That's according to her, and there's likely some truth to that. My take is that he probably treated her well growing up. We know that some violent male offenders have good relationships with their children, especially their daughters, who have no idea what their father does. They don't see that side of him. The fathers work hard to keep it concealed for obvious reasons. This is just conjecture, of course. We'll probably never really know. And in Jasmine's case, she did know who and what her father was, but obviously it didn't matter because of what she is.
Yes, Underwood said, and if I'm right, and Marx is capable of feeling a certain range of emotions, he probably felt used, betrayed. He held his tongue because he had no choice, and to some extent it was to his advantage, but to have it rubbed in his face, to have his reputation smeared, nationally smeared, on talk shows, on a personal level, with lies about how horribly he treated his little girl, it just cements him in the public consciousness as a bigger monster than they already thought he was. The difference is, the other stuff didn't matter to Marx. Fine, call him a serial killer, whatever. It brought him notoriety, which fed his narcissism. Fact was, he had killed multiple people. But how he treated his daughter, that did matter to him. He probably couldn't take it anymore. Vale thought about that. At some point before Jasmine's mother was killed, I have to think she realized her daughter was different, that she didn't form bonds, that she had little to no emotion, certainly no feelings for her, no more attachment to her than to a piece of candy.
You're right. Rhonda knew something was wrong.
How do you know? Jasmine said that?
Rhonda said it. There's a diary.
Underwood stood up, steadied himself for a second, then took a couple of steps across the room and pulled a small bound notebook from the shelf. I found it one day after Jasmine left. I don't think she realized I read it, but I doubt she'd care. He opened it, and as he thumbed to the right page, said, Jasmine had turned 12, and Rhonda, her own mother, wrote something that, in retrospect, is chilling. He handed Vale the 5x7-inch notebook. She wrote about some behavior she found disturbing and strange for a young girl. Vale read the neat handwriting. I came home this afternoon to find that Jazz had gotten out of school early. When I walked in, I saw her in the backyard. She didn't realize I was there. I watched her pulling Tabby's ears until the poor kitty shrieked. I stood there in shock. She then picked up a stick and chased it around the yard, trying to hit it. I ran outside and screamed at Jasmine to stop. I asked her what she was doing, and she looked at me with this, I don't know, I can't describe it. These eyes. It was a cold stare. She just looked at me and didn't answer. I punished her, told her to go to her room, and if I ever saw her do anything to hurt an animal again, she'd be grounded for a month. The next day I walked into my bedroom and found Sparky, her favorite stuffed animal, the one she slept with every night, cut into pieces, his arms and legs stacked in a pile on top of his body, which had a deep slit across his stomach. I know it was just a toy, but I felt like throwing up. What if it represented something else? Me. Vale looked up and met Underwood's gaze. Nothing more needed to be said. If there was any doubt as to who and what Jasmine Marx was, and there wasn't at this point, this passage sealed the deal. Classic psychopathy. Read this one, Underwood said, turning the page and tapping it with his right index finger. Today I went into the yard to take the garbage out and found a hamster dead, tossed on top of a dead raccoon. The coon's stomach had been cut open. I asked Jasmine what she knew about it, but she refused to make eye contact. She claimed she didn't know anything about it. I talked with Roscoe when he got home. I told him I thought Jazz was responsible, a tough thing for a mother to admit. He said, it's just a phase she's going through, to just leave her alone and she'll grow out of it. Truth is, I'm sick to my stomach. I don't know what to do.
And this one?
I confronted Jazz about it today. Told her I was going to take her to a doctor, just to talk. Maybe there's something bothering her that she needs to get off her chest. She picked up a hammer and threatened to hit me with it if I made her see a doctor. I told Roscoe I'm going to go to the police tomorrow to ask them what I should do. He said he would talk to her to see if she'll tell him what's bothering her. But she's his little girl, his perfect little girl who can do no wrong. He doesn't say it, but I think he thinks I'm overreacting or making these things up. I don't know what else to do, how to reach my daughter. It's tearing my heart out. She's my little girl. But she's turned into a monster. There, I wrote it. I couldn't bring myself to say it out loud, but I'm not doing her any good by ignoring what I'm seeing. It's only getting worse, and I now fear for my safety. If Roscoe's not taking this seriously, I need to do it myself.
Fail looked up, tears pooled in her eyes.
This is, she cleared her throat.
This is heartbreaking. There's nothing Rhonda could have done for Jasmine. Fail turned the page, but that was the last entry.
Is there another notebook?
That was the last entry, Karen. Rhonda Marks was found dead the next morning.
Jesus Christ.
It's hard to know for sure because we're only making reasonable assertions about the degree of Mark's psychopathy, but it's possible he would have eventually looked at his daughter as a lost cause too. Jasmine shocked him, I'm sure, when she threatened to go to the police and rat him out for killing Rhonda. When exactly their relationship totally deteriorated, I don't know. Even though it probably happened over time, that's the point when he started to see who his precious daughter really was. But you're only looking at one side of the equation. Jasmine wanted her father dead, too, in the worst way.
Why?
Who's the only person who knows the truth about what she's done? That she's the bloodline's killer?
Her father, Fail thought a second. Jasmine knew how he'd react. The only thing that could spoil her time in the limelight would be her father coming forward with a story that his daughter was really the bloodline's killer. Who knows if anything would have come of it? He'd have little to no credibility. Curtis would have had to reopen the investigation to dot the I's, but really, unless Marks could provide key evidence that would definitively prove that his daughter was the killer and that she framed him, it'd be just a lot of noise from a convicted killer who's trying to save his ass and use a get-out-of-jail-free card.
All true, Underwood said.
So she hired the biggest, baddest dude at Potter to attack him? To kill him?
Underwood frowned disapprovingly at Vale. She suddenly felt like a rookie profiler being schooled by the mentor.
No, Vale said, correcting herself. This is personal, and having someone else do the kill wouldn't be fulfilling.
He winked at her. You got it. Vale stood up and paced, thinking it through. So the only thing that makes sense, then, is that she would somehow try to facilitate the escape. Right again.
Did she tell you this?
In so many words, I had hours to piece it together. But from what I was able to gather, she did indeed help Mark's escape.
What could Jasmine possibly do to...
She worked at the Department of Corrections as...
Shit! Numbers... She worked in the back office. She had access to their computer systems.
Vale brought a hand to her forehead. She studied computer science. She hacked into the system, Underwood said. She said she replicated a judge's transfer order for another prisoner, forged it to read as a transfer for her father to be moved to Potter. Vale sat down hard.
Where Mark's childhood buddy Lance Kubiak was a correctional officer.
I didn't get the full story, but Kubiak was involved on some level.
She did that before the book came out, before he wanted to kill her.
I bet she regretted that move. Vail shook her head. Don't think so. She couldn't be sure he'd attempt an escape, but she knows her father and felt he would try to exploit the situation. The book and the media attention it'd bring would drive the nail in further, baiting him, getting his ire up, and motivating him to attempt an escape. She manipulated him, just as she manipulated me, and she gave him the tools he'd need to break out. So he played right into her hands. For her, it was a no-lose scenario. He'd either get killed in the escape attempt, or he'd make it out and come after her, and she'd be ready for him. She's not afraid of him, but it had to be on her terms, when she could control the circumstances. Being larger and stronger, he's dangerous, so she's got to be smarter. She's definitely smarter. Formidable. She manipulated all of us, did such a great job that no one saw what was really going on. Vail pulled out her phone and called Curtis. You guys find her? Almost there. You still have a reading on her? Vail pulled out the device. No, shit. Even if she ditched it, it should still be transmitting, right? How the hell should I know? Damn it. Vail ground her molars. I'm going to have a friend of mine, Aaron Uziel, email you a link to download the app to your phone so you can track it in real time in case she hasn't found it. Hang on a second. Vail pulled her Samsung away from her ear and texted both Uzi and Curtis, making the request preceded by the word urgent in caps. Install the app, she told Curtis, and let me know what happens when you get there. She hung up and began pacing, trying to clear her mind, refocus on Underwood. Why kidnap you? Why keep you alive? Underwood was quiet a long moment. Vail stopped, then turned her head slowly to face Underwood. Because you helped her? He looked away, not willingly. Of course not, Vail glared at him, waiting for him to elaborate. But you did help her. She took Rusty and put him in her basement, hooked up that internet camera and put it on the screen in my prison cell, constant inducement to do what she wanted. Or she wouldn't go over there and feed him. Worse. She'd make me watch while she killed him, and I fully believed her when she said she'd do it. After reading Rhonda's diary entries, after realizing who I was dealing with, I had zero doubt she would follow through on that threat. After my wife died, Rusty's been... he's been my life. I couldn't let her hurt him in any way. Vail thought of Hershey. She could not fault Underwood. I told her things to do that would shield her from your scrutiny, Underwood said. Ways to stage crime scenes. But I didn't give her everything she wanted. The clues you left me, to read your book so I'd figure out what she was up to, she shook her head. But I didn't catch on, not fast enough. You eventually got it. You read the cases. The cases? Vail thought a moment, then stood up as she replayed a conversation in her mind. Underwood watched her a moment. This isn't over, is it? She turned to face him. Not by a long shot. Chapter 59 Vail started for the door, trying to work it through her mind. Underwood was right behind her. What's wrong? There was a case. One of the agents I assigned to read your books called me before I came looking for you. The killer went after the cop's kid. Fernandez. He'd killed 4 children. The 5th one he kidnapped was the detectives who was working the case. Does Curtis